almost 100 scam pages purporting to be Irish businesses. There are obviously lots of shocking aspects to this story, but had anyone really realised or been aware of the enormous scale of it, Stephen?
I think we've seen this in other countries before. We've kind of seen individual pages pop up on Facebook over the last 2 years, essentially. You know, people have been... I think people have caught it on to this in other countries already. In Ireland, we've kind of seen these ads popping up for the last almost like 2 years or so now. And there's been investigations in kind of Australia and I think the UK as well into some of these pages. But this is the first one that's been done on Irish pages. And I haven't seen anyone go into it in as much depth as we have. So people have spotted that these similar pages are popping up. But one of the things is we're able to find a lot of where they're originating is centered on kind of like the Netherlands, and then there's countries in Southeast Asia and other parts of the world as well. But it really seems to be this almost like Dutch operation that's going on. So it's hard to say for sure that, you know, all of these pages are being run by one person. You know, they're very templated when you look at them. They're quite, shall we say, similar in format. So, you know, items will be on sale on all these different websites that are the same thing. They all end in like, you know, 95, rather than, you know, when you see an item on sale on here, it's usually like, you know, for $9.99 or $10.99. So that was kind of one giveaway. And then they all use similar sob stories or similar language to say, oh, the shop is closing down after 20 years and we want to reward our loyal customers as well. So there's definitely some sort of central element to the scam, I suppose, in that I don't know if it's one person saying, here's how to carry out a scam, and people are following that template, or whether it's one person as well. So we can't say for sure whether it's definitively one person, but for sure, this is the first time something of this kind has been done in Ireland anyway.
And how do they work at a really basic level? How do they interact with people, and how do people interact with them?
So I guess the easy thing to do is to take you through it from, first of all, the point of view of the shopper. So you might be sitting on Facebook or Instagram and this ad pops up that says, you know, our store is closing down, and it'll generally have an Irish name, you know, a combination of an Irish surname and an Irish place name. So we've seen places like, you know, Collins Kildare or Kira Cork or Doyle Dublin, you know. So it looks like this Irish store that, you know, is pushing an ad that says, after how many years we're closing down, but we want to clear our stock, so you know, come to the store and avail of our discounts. And on the website itself, there will be this kind of see almost. It will say, you know, offer only lasts for another 10 hours, and some of them will even have like a bar going along the top of the website with a countdown clock on it as well.
And there's one particular one that caught my eye in the piece that you have online on the journal. One store in Kerry, Ruby and Maeve, who had spent 10 wonderful years in the heart of Kerry, beside a fairly realistic but probably AI-generated photo with a 10-year anniversary sale sign. Just an example of what you were talking about there, just the incentive, the promise of getting a good deal, the consequence, oh, it's going to close down soon, you know, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the idea that you're supporting local then as well. So people go, oh, you know, here's a little boutique. It's not like one of these big high street retailers. You know, they're a nice small business. And again, like I said, sometimes they will have a sob story and you might go, oh, I kind of feel sorry for them. And before you know, you know, some people are like, well, I got to avail of this discount now and we'll buy the goods. And about 3 weeks later, they'll eventually get their goods. So one person we've had emailing us since we did the investigation said they were sent a leather boot, what they thought was rather a leather boot, but actually turned out to be just like cheap kind of plastic, and it didn't really look anything like it was advertised at all. So people say, well, I didn't get what I want, and usually when that happens from an online store, you know, you can return it, and you think, okay, well, I'll get my refund back on this. But actually what happens is, rather than coming from a place in Ireland, it seems to be coming from Southeast Asia. So it's this thing called drop shipping, which a lot of legitimate businesses will use. You know, it needs to be said, there's nothing wrong with drop shipping itself. I think there's big retailers. One particular DIY store said recently that they're going to start doing it. It just sort of speeds up. So how it works is that you place an order with a store, and rather than you having to go into the store to collect, again, unless it's a DIY store, say it's a lawnmower or a barbecue or something like that, they will just arrange for the supplier to ship you directly your barbecue or your lawnmower in that case. So in this case, what's happening is, people are using this drop shipping method. There's these massive, massive warehouses in Asia that produce all these kind of cheap goods. And so one person has set up a website, says, here's discount boots or discount jewelry or a discount dress or something like that. and you order it, and the person goes, right, I'm going to send it from somewhere in Southeast Asia to directly to the person in Ireland. The person in Ireland gets it, sees it's not actually the quality or the type of thing that I wanted. I guess I can return this, or I should be able to return it. And you get onto the website then and you complain. A lot of people say that sometimes they don't get back to you. It takes a lot of emails to finally get a response. And when you do, they say, right, you've got to return it to this place in, you know, with China or Vietnam or somewhere like that. And it's actually really expensive to do that because obviously those places are very far away. You know, you've got to pay international customs and all this sort of thing as well. So we had one person who contacted us to say they ordered a coat, I think it was, for about €90. And when they finally got it, it wasn't what they wanted. And they asked to return it. And they said, yeah, we'll either give you a 75% discount off your next order, which, again, you know, once bitten, twice shy, you have made the order. You're like, well, I'm not going to order off that shop again. Or that order will cost you €30 or €40 to return it. And again, you kind of don't want to be like, well, I've spent essentially the guts of 90 or the guts of, you know, 100 quid or more just to return this thing. So I think a lot of people end up stuck with items that they don't want and their money's gone and they kind of have no recourse to get it back.
Yeah, and I know one aspect of that as well is something you uncovered is that a lot of the pages, let's say on social media, would have a website that doesn't exist or a phone number that's not real. So that immediate recourse of actually contacting the business just wasn't available to people.
Yeah, I mean, this is actually one of the ways that they lure people in, right? So they might say, so up in Dublin, we've seen a couple of them where they say on Dublin's Grafton Street, which, you know, the main shopping street in Dublin, and as soon as you Google it, that there's no shop of that name on Grafton Street. But for someone who's might be unsuspecting, actually in those sorts of cases, you know, someone from Dublin might know that no shop like this exists on Grafton Street, but it might be people ordering from, you know, abroad. So again, because of the social media thing, like you can push these ads in multiple countries. So like, say, one of them that we came across was a jewellery shop, you know, that was pushing ads to kind of people across the globe saying, oh, you know, buy this Irish jewellery. And of course, that shop doesn't actually exist either. But, you know, well, it's on Grafton Street. It must be real. Or they have phone numbers as well. You can kind of see sometimes that, you know, they say they're in Dublin, but it doesn't correspond to a Dublin area code number. Or like as soon as you go on Facebook and you look at the location information of the Facebook page, it actually shows up really, really quickly that these are scams. You know, you can see that they say they're in Dublin. And you look up the little map and the about info, it says actually they're in Vietnam or they're in China or something like that as well. So it's easy to find, you know, once you go digging, you know, that's the thing that we say to people about trying to find these things. You know, it's always just stop and think. And I, you know, I go back to that sense of urgency that these websites imbue in you when they're trying to lure you in. You know, that's what really gets people. It's as soon as you start stopping and looking around and just you know, pause and see kind of who these people are, what this business is, where they're from. Like you scratch beneath the surface and it all falls apart very quickly.
It's shockingly elaborate, though, for a scam to go that hyper-local as well, you know, to bring it back to, let's say, a shop in Kerry that doesn't exist. I mean, it's really elaborate.
Yeah, and again, you know, as I explained, just the sheer scale of it. Like, you know, we found 100 pages in Ireland, but we found hundreds more internationally, and it's all this templated format. You know, like I said, there's definitely some kind of central element to it, whether it's, you know, one individual, unlikely, or, you know, a couple of individuals operating in tandem, or just someone who says, here, you said you go about doing this. But it's quite clever in that, you know, they're not just picking, you know, really, really, you know, typical Irish names, like, you know, Murphy. And there's been a couple of Murphys, obviously, but like, you know, Murphy or Sean or things people would think, you know, as almost an American parody of Irish names. They're very, very kind of, you know, something like Collins. You're not going to think, oh, someone outside Ireland will know the surname Collins or be as familiar with it. Or, you know, they could pick places like Dublin or Cork, but they choose, as you say, Kildare, because obviously there's the Kildare Village outlet there as well that people would be familiar with as well. So there is definitely some element of research that's gone into it. You know, it's not just, you know, throwing up mud at a wall and see what sticks. It is quite elaborate in that sense, as you say, yeah.
Yeah, and how, this is a difficult question possibly, but how legal or illegal is this? Obviously, you've got people who feel ripped off, you know, they have been ripped off in a sense that they don't have what they wanted or they never get what they wanted. How legal or illegal is this? Because it's hard to trace as well, I presume.
Precisely. It's quite murky, you know. So, you know, if you've been scammed, you can go to the guards and say, I feel I've been scammed here. And the guys can investigate it. Like, particularly where your items don't show up, you can definitely say, you know, well, I've ordered this thing online, it hasn't showed up, someone might have my credit card details, and that might be a scam. You could say, well, that's, you know, illegal. It's quite difficult. So we were on to the Competition and Consumer Protection Authority, and they said, if the website is based in Ireland, you can make a complaint to them. But, of course, the websites actually aren't based in Ireland. So, you know, we dug into the source code and the Facebook page, and we saw, as I mentioned previously, that, you know, largely they're based around the Netherlands. You know, some of them are in other places as well, but like none of the pages, essentially bar one or two, were said they were based in Ireland. So you can't really have any comeuppance there by going to the Competition Consumer Protection Authority. In terms of European law, like, you can complain. The CCPC said to us you can get onto them. They have a mechanism on their website to complain to essentially the European body that's their equivalent. But again, it's hard to know, like, where do you dig these people out from? You know, can you complain to Meta and get their identities? That's unknown. Like, who's running the pages? Could they just say that they're based in the Netherlands or somewhere like that, but they're actually based in Southeast Asia? It's very, very hard to trace. You know, we've seen this with digital investigations recently, you know, again, whether it's one person or a group of people or just like a broad kind of scattering of people who are doing the same thing. It's really, really hard to tell. So because it's all online, it's all behind the screen, it's hard to know kind of, you know, how to find the people involved, how to prosecute them, and how to, you know, ultimately enforce that consumer protection law. So it is really difficult. It's really murky. This is the online world we're living in now. And as much as authorities and you know, bodies like the European Commission, the European Union are trying to do something about it, that's kind of, you know, falling short.
And as you said, given the scale of it and the templated format, it's likely that there is some kind of centralised unit at play here. And there's likely as well, knowing, you know, kind of organised criminal activity, there's going to be a degree of separation here between, you know, the fake Facebook page and the actual criminal who's running it.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the other thing as well for a lot of people is, you know, OK, it's small amounts of money to each individual. You might be annoyed if you lose €100 or €150, you know, and I appreciate not everyone is in a position to be able to afford to lose that much, but some people do. Like, are you really, really going to, like, go to the ends of the earth and get the solicitors in for the sake of a couple of £100? Probably not. So it's a question for people, how much are you going to chase this? You know, if there was evidence somehow of, again, that coordinated activity or central thing, and you could link people together, like, maybe the authorities could do that. But I think that's kind of, for the scammers, almost the beauty of it. You know, it's like, it's money lost for people. It'll make them annoyed. They're not really going to chase it that much. But all that money adds up, you know. As I said, there's hundreds and hundreds of these sites across the world. And if this is a centralised thing and people are making money off this, they are surely making a lot of money too.
Yeah. And as you mentioned as well, the social media company Meta has a role to play in this by promoting the fake ads for money for their sponsored posts. What did they tell you?
Yeah, so, I mean, you think if you put an ad on Meta, like, you know, you're going to make money off it. You know, it's hard to gauge how much each ad costs, because some of them are up for a longer period of time. And, you know, if that is up for 3 weeks, you might make 100. But there was 50,000 ads just for the Irish stores put up. So if you assume that's, you know, almost the minimum of a euro an ad, that's €50,000 that Meta has made. Okay, maybe not massive in the grand scheme of their global earnings, but it is, you know, a good chunk of money on advertising. They told us when we asked them what they were doing about these pages that almost it was kind of like scammers are going to find a way. You know, the scammers will always find a way to get through. And as much as they're trying to tackle it, they're investing in new technology to do this. But, you know, people will always, if they want to set up a Facebook page to do this, they can. So they didn't quite say anything about this. It was nothing that we can do. You know, they were very firm in saying that they were investigating. We did send them a list of all of the pages that we come across as well early this week, just before we published the piece, and they did start shutting a load of them down. So not all of them are down. Some of them are still up by the time of publication, and as far as I'm aware, are still up. But they have taken action, but it's a reactive thing as opposed to a proactive thing as well. So hard to know whether this is going to be prevented in future, whether it's going to stop happening all of a sudden. Meta say they're investing in it and trying to do that, but that remains to be seen.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you that as well, because, I mean, this is obviously, as you said, this is the online world we live in, and as per, I suppose, usual, really, the scammers are one step ahead, and I suppose the advice would be just be that extra bit careful until you're 100% sure, maybe, before you send money.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, I mentioned earlier, you know, just pause, take your time. You know, if something seems too good to be true, it is. If you haven't heard of this store before and it's suddenly pushing you close, like, just take a look around it. You know, I think we've all heard of the high street retailers and bigger brands like that, you know, that we know well. I mean, like, sometimes you kind of get fake stores as well. So if you, you know, top or a piece of gym equipment or something from a sports retailer or a sports brand that looks really, really cheap, like, that is, you know, possibly too good to be true. And we've seen sort of scams that are built around those as well. So just pause and take your time. Check out who's selling it, where they're from. Like, do their social media pages stack up? Do they link to legitimate websites? All of these things. When you get onto the sites themselves, poke around them, because one of the facets of this particular scam is that you know, at first glance, the sites do look legitimate. Like, they have stupid, boring details for most people that are like, you know, privacy policy or terms and conditions and all these things that people will never, ever read. But when you actually do read them on these websites, you kind of actually uncover, you know, inconsistencies, spelling mistakes, or they might call themselves, you know, a different name because they're using an old template or something like that. So it's just to be extra bit vigilant about something like that as well. And, you know, I always say this about online shopping, you know, particular, even if it's, you know, you're buying off a legitimate retailer, you know, if you're browsing late at night and you kind of think, oh, there's an offer, leave it in your basket. You know, like, you know, if you're on your computer, your phone at 10 o'clock at night and you're thinking about buying something, you know, just wait till the next morning, sleep on it, think, okay, actually, do I really want this? And then at that stage, if you think you do, have a bit of poke around as well and just see, you know, it's all about conscious decision making and just conscious shopping as well. You know, you will learn a lot more by taking your time rather than rushing into a purchase. So.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thanks for your time, Stephen. I appreciate your time today.
No problem at all. Thanks for the chat. Yeah.